side of the pond. He is DJ Schweitzer. I am Jeremy Lance. And MLS, according to the title, is back.
Yeah, thank God the tournament's named that, because if it wasn't for the name, I would have known it was even gone.
Yeah, right. You're just like, oh, wait, did you go somewhere?
I barely even knew that you had left. Of course, we're being facetious here. We knew MLS was gone, much like every other sport on the planet disappeared for a while. But you're right. We are recording on Wednesday night, and we just experienced our first MLS is back tournament match as it kicked off between Miami and Orlando in what is the weirdest first edition of a manufactured derby we've ever seen. And we got to see goals. We got to see an injury that was slowly dealt with by the medical staff. We got to see mega advertising.
Yeah.
It was everything you could have hoped for, except for really new and exciting camera angles, which I feel like was hyped. But we just got normal camera angles from, you know, like a high school football game stadium setup.
We also got some pretty sharp camera angles, which if you're used to watching FC Cincinnati broadcast, you're used to because of the way that Nippert's set up and how some of the cameras really have to shoot down onto the field instead of kind of at it.
Yeah, it felt very much like old White Hart Lane shots, yeah. Too. Spurs fan, it was, or shoot, think of some of the weird angles we get in USL because of baseball stadiums and the like.
Yeah.
So I really felt like everyone was making a big deal about the camera angles for like all the wrong reasons.
We had the world's largest Adidas logo that didn't actually exist.
That's pretty nice. Definitely in blatant violation of FIFA statutes. So that's one thing.
Ah, what you gonna do?
It's MLS's thing.
Hey man, pandemic times. We're just trying to get by.
Bring back the shootout.
But so we did. We have an MLS tournament that has begun. We will get into everything that has been involved with that. Just fast-paced, insane news cycle that has been the lead up and the start of the MLS is back tournament. Also, of course, we have a ton of Premier League matches because they're coming thick and fast. Like I just dawned on me, like I just got used to like, yes, awesome. Premier League's back. I get to watch Chelsea on the regular. And then like, I looked at the calendar. I was like, oh, Premier League is almost over already. Like we're done in 2 weeks.
Yeah, they really said they were going to get it done quickly. And you're like, oh man, that's so much soccer. It'll feel endless. And it has, but it's going to be like over and done with in a blink of an eye. Just like, yeah, the Bundesliga was. Like I felt like we got into it and I was like, oh yeah, soccer again. And then like, as soon as we got into it, the league was like, yeah, we're done now.
Well, that's it. That's all we came here to do, was just these games. Oh, you sure you don't want to do more? Nah, we're done. See you guys.
This is all we needed. So, unfortunately, the MLS is back tournament won't be that way. We think there's supposed to be stuff coming after that, too. I'm not holding my breath, but lots to talk about. But the one thing that no one wants us to talk about, of course, is the thing that we have to talk about at the start. Now that soccer is back, we have to talk about fantasy again, even though we've been doing it for the last week or so anyway.
Yay. I might take a sip of bourbon while you look up those awesome fantasy stats for us here.
I'm, you know, looking forward to the bourbon that I have to drink after reading off these statistics. I improved one place to 57th. You improved two places to 99th.
Hello.
On the page, stupid guy. Congratulations there. That is in the Premier League.
Okay, I was going to say, this is for which one? I don't even remember.
Yeah, I didn't say it. This is for the Premier League one.
Hey-o. So,
yeah, congrats to you and I for both improving. Mike DiPietro, 13th straight show in a row, I think, that he's been sitting on top of the pile. So congrats to him. Over in the MLS League, we're picking up where we left off. So these are the last stats that were available before the shutdown. Reed Connolly's MLS fantasy boss was on top. This is his third show there. So we'll see if he can maintain that spot. I've already forgot to set my lineup for that, and I'll be honest, is it even running? I don't even know. But if it is, you know, sign up for it, and you can win added time outfitters wristbands. I was in 35th. You were in fourth place.
Heading into this. Oh, well, here I go.
Yeah. You jumped 18 places since the last points update. So, you know, gotta keep it that north end of the table, my friend.
Hopefully we're doing good. I have, guys like Michael Barrios and Jesse Gonzalez and all these guys. I mean, they're going to give me some good points, right?
Yeah, right alongside guys like Carlos Vela or Brad Stuber, guys that will totally make an impact in this tournament.
Sweet. I cannot wait. Champion.
Oh, wait.
What's that? Are they not available?
Yeah, none of them are available in this tournament because they are sitting it out entirely. That's probably a great place to start with the MLS's back tournament. Let's flip things around a little different than how we do it on most shows where we start in Europe. But since MLS is back, it's worthy of giving it some billing this week, I feel like. And we can start with the fact that there are a decent amount of actually really big name players who will not be playing in this big hurrah of MLS's return.
So you mentioned Carlos Vela. I guess that's the biggest name, right? As far as big names not playing.
Yeah, definitely. And I wouldn't be shocked still, especially how we've seen some of the bubble infections that we've seen within the MLS bubble so far. And we'll be talking more about that. But I wouldn't be shocked if we saw some more guys be like, I just don't know about this now.
Yeah, I do wonder, once you get there and you're settled in and you've had your $65 roast beef sandwich and you're like, all right, I guess, we've all tested fine. Okay, maybe I guess I'll just stay. It seems like it'd be almost be more hassle at this point to leave. I don't even know how I would even do that. Am I driving home? What am I renting a car and just driving back?
I mean, I have wondered a little bit about that. Like, if you got into the bubble and you did decide that you wanted to peace out, it's not like you can call an Uber and be like, come pick me up at Disney World, because that place is closed right now. Yeah. So, if they tried to drive in, I'm sure they'd probably get cut off by, like, Disney's armed personnel that I'm certain they have patrolling the outer bounds of the Magic Kingdom and all the hotels and stuff that everyone's dealing with and staying at right now. But I feel like a player would probably have to like hoof it out of the resort, like to like the closest gas station.
Yeah. It's like they're trying to leave a compound of some kind of like cult that they've been.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. You know, they're trying to get away.
It's escaped this Church of Scientology, and I had to hide in someone's Buick as they drove off the property.
I mean, can't you see, mob style Mickey Mouse, mean mugging from the back window of a limo that's parked nearby, just shaking their head at any MLS or NBA player that's trying to escape?
I imagine there's just like a barbed wire fence all the way around it that they're just like just keeping them in.
Oh, definitely.
A bunch of guards standing there with shotguns.
These fences are for your protection. It'll keep out the virus. But no, the MLS back tournament has returned, and we've got these big names that are bypassing it. It seems like a majority of the players are at least feeling some desire to be there and play. They probably want some sense of normalcy like everyone does.
Yeah.
I can't imagine we're not going to talk about this, so we may as well raise the specter now.
Let's go for it.
We have this MLS COVID Cup Twitter account that has sprung up that has been – I can't remember who made the joke, but I'll steal it anyway. They should probably win a Pulitzer Prize at the end of all this thing for the amount of information that they've leaked out. And a lot of it's been correct so far too. And it seems like it's either a player or a media member that has pretty high access. And they're just shining a light.
It's got to be a player, right?
You almost would think it would have to be from the sheer volume of stuff that they've heard.
Yeah.
Like how players talk to each other.
And how quickly they're hearing it. Like, it seems like they're getting word about stuff in a short amount of time that would seem like it would be, it wouldn't make sense for it to somehow trickle out to a media member. Yeah, I think it's definitely a player who, yeah, obviously I think would it makes sense as a player because it would be someone that has kind of the connection and the trust of all the other guys within the bubble.
Mm-hmm.
Of like, hey, I'm gonna text you this video of the spigot on my my bathtub flying off as I turn the water on. You know, text it to you. You go post this.
Yeah, definitely. And that's the thing, you know, that people forget. Yeah, there are rivalries and guys who don't like one another within the ranks of MLS. That's inevitable that you're going to have. But it's actually a really kind of tight-knit brotherhood, especially with the way players move around in Major League Soccer fairly frequently. You get to know a lot of the guys fairly quickly. And, you know, if you, even players who've had the fortunateness in their career to play against the same person a couple years over, you end up becoming kind of friends with people on the other end of the field fairly easily just from seeing each other out there so frequently. So that network is large, and the players trust one another in a way that you can't really understand unless you've been in that type of environment before. And it's not at all surprising that we're seeing this type of stuff leak out, especially when it really feels like players' fears or concerns are being downplayed throughout the course of the process.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's part of it. I think there is there's definitely part of it where it's kind of being the voice for the voiceless in the way that I think a lot of players probably don't feel. You know, not every player feels that comfort level of speaking up about things, even as frivolous as a $65 sandwich. You know, so I think there's a lot of players that kind of want this mouthpiece to kind of, you know, basically filters this stuff over to them, and then they can fire it out in this anonymous way.
Yeah, it's kind of like the secret footballer that we've had over in England for such a long time. And you've kind of been waiting for like a ghost player account to pop up over these years. And I'm sure we've had them before and we just haven't recognized it. But this one we kind of know is a player. And I'm like, I've set up alerts on my phone for every time they tweet because I want to see what that bleeding edge information is out of there. And even if it's just a misrepresentation of how some of the players are interpreting things, it does give you a view inside the bubble that we probably wouldn't otherwise have unless someone had the balls to actually go out there and put the stuff out.
Yeah, I'm actually going through it right now. They had a meme that they posted tonight at a couple hours before kickoff that said, clear eyes, COVID-19 can't lose. I guess we need to kind of get into the big storylines that have emerged so far. And that mainly centers around Nashville and Dallas. Dallas being a team that has already been yardapulted from the tournament. But as of, according to the Twitter, the MLS COVID Cup Twitter account, FC Dallas is actually still in the bubble as of 7 hours ago.
Yeah, they've not actually left yet, to our knowledge. And that's probably partly because they have these positive tests. There aren't going to be airlines that are going to allow a team to fly home when they know in the last 14 days they've had people that have tested positive for the disease. So they can't really even go anywhere, which means Dallas and Nashville, like them, are now living in these bubbles within the bubble where they can't even leave their portions of the room. It was saying that Dallas, the players have been completely restricted to their rooms, aside from like a walk here and there, like a team walk together. And look, I don't know if anyone would really be willing to admit this straight up yet, but that's almost like being in prison, like the size of the space And yeah, it's a plush prison, right, with like comforts that you wouldn't have otherwise. But they're being kept there and they can't go anywhere. And these guys had to leave their homes and their families to basically go sit in an Orlando hotel room for two weeks as they watch all their peers get to go play, which is what they were, you know, hoping best case scenario would come out of that. So it's just, I really feel for the players, especially those who didn't bring the infection in-house. And it's, we don't even know how this happened. I feel like a lot of people jumped on the Orlando Pride players when they had to drop out of it because it was found out that they'd gone to bars. And a lot of those came back as false negatives. But, you know, we don't know that maybe a Dallas player did anything wrong. He may just have been inadvertently exposed in a way, and then it spread amongst his teammates. So,
well, we don't know how it first started, but there was reports by Grant Wall yesterday saying that other players, other teams basically were complaining about FC Dallas not just kind of walking around the place, not following rules and not doing the right things. And other players were having health concerns about FC Dallas being in the bubble.
Yeah. So it seems like MLS hasn't necessarily enforced their own protocols as tightly as you would like. And clearly Dallas and Nashville have had some sort of a breach that leaves them in a position where they're likely, you know, with Dallas certainly, and Nashville at the time that we're recording this, they haven't officially been kicked out yet, but it sounds increasingly like the other teams just won't even mess with them. And that they're going to have to be, you know, booted from the tournament at this point.
So we are recording on Wednesday night. Don Garber said at halftime of the Orlando Miami match that a decision won't be made on Nashville till the morning. Obviously, this podcast will come out after that decision is made or not made. So how would you like to proceed with this podcast? Is if they did get kicked out or not get kicked out? Let's predict the future.
I think it's a certainty.
Being listened to.
Yeah, I think it's a certainty they get kicked out. And I think the only reason it hasn't been announced yet is probably because they're going to have to realign the groups because of this. When Dallas left, that left Group B with three teams. And then Group A currently sitting at its, what, five teams?
Well, six, soon to be five.
Yeah, soon to be five when Nashville goes.
That actually almost makes it easier, though, right? Because you get rid of Nashville, and then you just move one of those teams over to fill in Group B.
It seems really simple, but then if you look at how the groups are actually structured, it does make it a little bit more complicated. And what it really boils down to is the groups were set on conference basis, and that these points earned in group play would go towards the regular season schedule because these would be games they were certain they were going to be playing otherwise. The problem is the Group A is Eastern Conference and Group B is Western Conference. So you almost have to find one of those teams within that group that was going to play all three of the teams in the other group to actually make it work. And on top of it, they haven't even played yet. So it's
Chicago, right? Chicago's the move?
Chicago makes the most sense. I don't know if their schedule actually contained those other three games that would be necessary to play in Group B. But from a you know, physical standpoint, if you really care about that, whenever all the teams are located in the same hotel complex, you know, the Western Conference makes more sense. But then do they stay there for the rest of the season? I don't know. I mean, we don't even know whether there's going to be a rest of the season at this point, whether that's even possible. We may find out by the end of this tournament that this whole idea of sending everyone around just doesn't work in this country because we have no discipline to even allow this kind of stuff to happen. So I don't know. I think there's way too many things that are left out in the open about it. But I, you know, they're going to rearrange things for sure. And I'm certain that Nashville is going to be left on the outside looking in.
Yeah, that's I think that's the reality that will be dealt with or left with come tomorrow morning. There was a match played. We do have soccer that's now starting. It just from the on-field standpoint, the fact that you and I were able to turn on televisions – and watch a soccer match that is of MLS flavor today. How do you feel? I mean, how are you feeling about the tournament from an on-field thing and not so much the off-field thing, as much as it kind of distance those?
Yeah, I mean, if we can separate away, like, the should they even be playing this tournament question, and when I put it into that vacuum, I mean, I enjoyed that I got to watch Major League Soccer tonight. That was fun. The uniqueness of the situation I found appealing, and you know, we were getting to see a regular season game in some capacity played in a very unique scenario, a new location with new production features that we don't normally get exposed to throughout the course of the match. I enjoyed all that. Was the soccer great? No.
Was it going to be great? I mean, the first couple matches of the Premier League, were those great too when they came back?
They weren't, and nor were the Bundesliga matches. And you would expect that. Guys are always rusty at the start of seasons, and we're essentially at the start of a season again with Major League Soccer. So, yeah.
And you had a matchup between a team that's been a gigantic disappointment their entire existence and a team that's existed for now three matches.
Yeah. So the expectation level should never be that high. But I enjoyed it nonetheless.
Everyone is saying, and I think it's definitely something that makes sense, that it's going to be really hard to kind of predict how this tournament will go as far as, like, who's going to actually be competitive and win this thing, right? Like, it's really a toss-up on how this thing's going to go down.
Totally.
I mean, any team can probably somehow pull this off.
Yeah, I mean, I wrote about this for Cincy Soccer Talk in my debut article for them. There are a lot of factors that are at play here. Major League Soccer is a league that's highly dependent on home wins. If you look, the home team wins a staggering percentage of the time in Major League Soccer. So home field advantage has essentially been neutralized in this tournament, which is a really big deal. Then just the added pressure of playing in this bubble itself, the concern about potential transmission and then taking it home or potentially ruining your career is something that's undoubtedly weighing on the guys, and the strangeness of it, right? Like, it's never easy to play and get your head in the right space when you're not living in your own bed. And these guys don't get to do that for, you know, potentially up to 6 weeks. That's a long time to go. And then throw in the chaotic nature of tournaments in general. There's always people that are considered underdogs or Cinderellas or whatever that would bust out of the
group
and go on a run. So I agree with you totally. Anyone could do anything in this. And, you know, we could even see that tonight. Like, Orlando looked pretty bad, but they could, like,
but they got a win.
They got a win. And, you know, that kind of went against, you know, the run of play throughout stretches of the match. So I agree with you. I think there's a total unpredictable nature to this tournament that's going to make it at least a spectacle to watch in its own right.
Yeah, I think it's going to be pretty sweet to just see the unpredictability of these matches that may help counterbalance the possibly less than crispy play, if you will. I do wonder, we talk about, you know, the not so ideal living conditions of being just kind of trapped in a resort and just kind of being stuck in that environment, not being able to go home and not being able to see family and not being able to just kind of have a normal rhythm to your life. Do you think there will be players, maybe not whole teams, but players that almost try to get their team to not advance out of the group stage so they can go home early?
I think I even wrote in the article, I would 100% not be shocked if we saw teams, and I think mail it in is probably an unprofessional way of putting it, But then being like, look, the priority here is to just treat this like a preseason. Like, we are just trying to get – we're talking about 9 points maximum here in Major League Soccer. That is, that can be a lot, but it can also be not a lot and easily erased when things kind of get back to more normal, if that happens. If – I mean, we could even see the whole rest of the year called off. Like, these are all things that are realistic. So I think teams are kind of like, look – like, we're going to go play in the hot-ass sun all day long. You know, we're going to be in weird climates playing in packed schedules. Let's just not put all of our chips in this basket. And, you know, then you get to the other side of the equation. I think there will be teams that will be highly motivated by the situation and see that, you know, CONCACAF Champions League place dangling on the end of the stick and go, we could have that. And like, maybe we don't even deserve to have that, but maybe that'd be the carrot we need to get good players in for next year to make us a competitive team. There are a lot of ways it can be interpreted, but I think there will definitely be some teams that'll be happy to get home sooner rather than later.
Yeah, and I do wonder, you know, we kind of talked about this when this was first announced, like, now, like, how much... if there was any hunger for any team or any player to actually win this thing, that its merits and weights are still really yet to be determined as far as how people will view this, the weight of winning a tournament like this. Like, if you were a player that came in with that determination and that hunger, how long before that hunger and determination gets beaten out of you by being stuck in a resort eating a $65 sandwich?
I mean,
like, at what point do you just like, I'm done. I don't care anymore.
Oh man. I think that point's different for everyone, but I could totally see, especially some of these more pampered players in the DP kind of roles who are used to getting their way about a lot of things, being like, nah, this ain't for me. And maybe piecing out, but I also think too, like, as a player, professionalism will drive, I think, the baseline for most guys. And I think the further you advance in the tournament, this is kind of like the League Cup situation. You don't really care about it until you get to like the quarterfinals, and then you're kind of like, hey, we could win a trophy here. And you take things a little bit more seriously the further you get into things.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how, you know, we've been talking about with the Bundesliga. Like, when the Bundesliga came back, we were all like, sweet, soccer's back. I can't wait to watch it. And then, like, the second week the Bundesliga was back, we were like, I'm going to go mow. I'm going to get the mow done before it gets too hot outside. You know, you get excited for it to happen, and then it actually happens, and then your excitement level of it kind of does drop off. I think it'll do it a little bit less for supporters here in America, because we have a little bit more invested into these teams. But yeah, I think that's going to be another interesting thing. Like, I'm sure these first week of matches are going to have some killer ratings, at least from an MLS size killer rating. And then I think you're going to have kind of a drop in interest. And that's going to partially be because, like, Major League Baseball starts in like a week and a half. The NBA and NHL will start by the end of this month. So, like, the whole let's be the first team, the first league back, that, I mean, that's only good for, like, you know, 15 days.
Yeah. It's a short window of utter dominance that they're looking to create for themselves. But I mean, they'll sit on this throne as much as they can and try to take advantage of it as much as they can. And that's why I think we saw some of these reports coming out of specifically the MLS COVID Cup account, saying the general atmosphere within the players, at least, was that Garber just really wanted to get this one match in so they could show off some of the developments that they had come up with to try to make themselves appealing for this big upcoming national TV deal that they've really been trying to maneuver chess pieces on for a decade. And I mean, this is down to the crazy rate of expansion, the markets they're choosing, the names they're trying to recruit in through DP purposes. This is all part of the same equation. And the players kind of feel like, oh, this, they're being exploited in this circumstance to try to show off some things that they were being billed as revolutionary. And I got to say, I really felt like we didn't really see anything that I thought of nuts tonight.
I mean, I like that overhead cam, especially on some replays. That was kind of cool. But like, okay. I mean, okay. So that's one thing.
I've not been a huge fan of matches without piped in fan noise in the pandemic era. But I really did enjoy for the first time a match with the non piped in noise, the actual match noise itself, because they invested and put some extra like microphones in the field and around the field, that I really did feel like gave us a better understanding about what was happening on the pitch. We definitely got to hear some of the colorful language that often gets drowned out by match crowd noise. But at the same time, I enjoyed that aspect of it too. But, you know, other than that, the only like really crazy thing that we saw was that giant Adidas view in logo in the middle of the pitch.
Yeah, that was pretty dope. What was your favorite thing you overheard on the mics?
It would have to be the first Orlando goal, where I can't remember the name of the guy who scored it, but he screamed F off, I'm not even sure who,
they're in the corner. Like, who's in the corner that's causing that big of an issue for you there, bud?
Probably no one.
Mouse? Don Garber?
It was a raccoon, made it all the way down from RFK, but,
I think my favorite was there was like a questionable non-call at one point, and you just heard like two Inter Miami players just yelling, just kind of just giving it to the ref, just be like, dude, come on, dude. And it just felt like, oh man, am I at like a Gotham Rec League match? Like this is what happens all the time here.
Man, most likely. With someone saying dude that much, it was undoubtedly Will Trapp. It's got
to
be Will Trapp.
No, it has to be.
Midwest guy. A dude would definitely fit in there appropriately.
parting thoughts on MLS before we jump across the pond.
Other than the fact that I think scientifically it's idiotic that they're holding this tournament in Florida of all places right now.
You know, that's one of the things that like a month ago sounded like a pretty smart move. And then now you're like, ooh, if we could have maybe drew this one up again, knowing this knowledge, Wyoming, here we come.
Yeah, right. They could more easily construct a load of fields up in the middle of nowhere, and leave the players far less exposed. I understand the amenities and the availability for other entertainment options is different in Florida too. But at the same time,
and the fact that one of your rights holders owns the property,
you know, I mean, there's other things that are involved in this equation. But other than that, you know, I think in some respects it's good that they're back. We got to see something new. We got to see some different ways to approach the game. And while I don't necessarily agree that we should be having the soap opera, I'm going to watch it while it's, you know, unfolding.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things. I think you wrestle with it. As a consumer, like, hey, is this a thing that should be happening? But that's just kind of the new reality of like wrestling with the risk and the kind of just ethical, like, should I endorse this kind of thing? And that's not even a sports thing now for all of them. I mean, that's every facet of our lives, going to work, meeting up with friends, having family over, like we all have to do that. And this is just one additional thing. Now it's like, now me watching soccer on TV am I endorsing a bad decision?
Yeah, I know. It's like, will I be watching the 2022 Qatar World Cup?
Yeah, exactly. It's the same thing. It's like, morally, I abhor everything that went into how that was bid was won and how things were have been done as far as construction. Man, I love the World Cup, though.
I know.
So, all right, let's go over across the pond where things are less not bad. less terrible, and that's in the EPL, plenty of matches. A lot of teams since we've last potted have played like twice, if not more. I think there's actually a few teams that have somehow played like three games since we've last done a podcast.
There's just the games are so thick and fast. I felt like Spurs probably had 3 days off in between matches, and it's just it feels like we're in the middle of Boxing Day and that crazy winter break period in England, but it's being stretched out over a month.
Bitch, yeah, it's just a continuous loop of matches. Let's start with the race, not with physically within the top four or as far as like the top of the table, but for staying in the top four. And that really comes down at this point, realistically, to three teams. The two teams currently in the second part of that top four, Chelsea in third place. They got two wins and a loss. They played three matches since we've last done a podcast. Two wins and a loss. They lose at West Ham. They squeak one out against Crystal Palace because that's a good team to play against. And then they beat, I forget who they beat another team. I completely forgot who it was already. Leicester City in fourth place, with a win, with a loss, with a draw, not exactly the most stellar performances out of Leicester City so far, as they've now, you know, they were in a pretty good position there in third, and now they've already given that up completely. They're in fourth place, and hot as can be, Manchester United currently in fifth place. They've won all of their matches they've played since the restart, except for their opener. They didn't win their opener, right? The guy against Spurs.
Yeah, one of our.
Outside of that, it's been all wins.
Yeah, I mean, Leicester and United have been a tale of contrasting fortunes
since the
start. And yeah, you're right. Leicester had a pretty sizable, comfy gap. Probably heading into the break, their form had really dropped off a bit before break too. And it's really stayed on that very wobbly path they've been on. They might still have enough of a cushion. They're 7 points ahead of Wolves in sixth place. That's probably enough, but if they keep on the same trajectory, it wouldn't be surprising if we saw, you know, a Wolves or a Sheffield United potentially sneak into those places, that might be in that Champions League realm, presuming that City still get the boot out of this next edition.
The three teams we're talking about, though, United, Leicester, and Chelsea, honestly don't have any big matches for the most part. Like, they all each play like one decent match. The rest of them are presumed winnable matches. United do play Leicester on the last day of the season. So that could be a very interesting match with implications as for the Champions League spots. Leicester City also plays Spurs, which is sort of a big opponent right now. I don't know. It depends on what Spurs team shows up. And then Chelsea plays Liverpool towards the end of the season. I think that's their second to last match. But otherwise, it's a handful of matches left for all three of them, and they're all should be, for the most part, winnable matches. So it's really more about who screws the pooch and loses, leaves points on the table that they should have had.
Yeah. I mean, if you had to guess, you would presume those two teams will probably lock it up. I'm at the point with Spurs where I think their contention for Europe is even in question in general. They may not even be looking at Europa League football at this point, given their current form since the restart as well. So temp check wise, I've certainly gone pretty cold on them. And it really seems like quite a few of those other chasing pack teams, Arsenal, even Sheffield United to a certain extent, they're just not going to have enough gas in them to get over the hill and into those coveted Champions League places.
Don't forget Burnley. That's another club that's also currently ahead of you in the table.
Thanks for the reminder. Appreciate it.
Hey, you know, you think about future managers, you know, Sean Dyche, maybe.
Ooh, man, if Mourinho is roughshod and his style is not running very popular in Spurs fan base, I'm sure a Dyche worm eating defense would, you know, be exactly the solution they're looking for.
Outstanding. Let's go to the bottom of the table, where it's down to essentially five teams that, as much as Brighton's been terrible, they still have a decent gap at the moment. I guess that could evaporate quickly, but at the moment you're really talking about West Ham in 16th on 31 points. They've got 4 points on the restart, which is actually for that end of the table been pretty good. Watford, who, by the way, that was the team I was missing there that lost a match to Chelsea. So Chelsea had the win over Watford. That was the one. They've only had 4 points as well on the restart. They are also on 31 points. And then the teams currently in relegation spots, 18th place is Aston Villa, 27 points. Aston Villa only has got 2 points since the restart. 19th place, Bournemouth, have lost all of their matches since the restart. And then Norwich, basically done almost at this point. They have lost 5 straight since the restart, all of their matches as well. And yeah, I don't know if you saw, you know, the footage of the end of that match over the weekend, where their players were pretty much, you know, just left despondent on the field after that match.
Yeah, they just got bowled over, and yeah, I feel like you're seeing the same kind of despondency out of Bournemouth at the moment. They just seem resigned to their fate, and I don't necessarily think Villa are showing a ton more courage in that sense, but they seem to like feel like they might be able to punch their way out of it. There's some hope left in that camp, but I think the Bournemouth and the Norwich in particular, like the gap is just too large, and it seems like emotionally that neither one of them really have what it takes to actually, you know, go in and do it.
A 10-point gap from safety for Norwich currently. Their remaining matches, they play West Ham next on the weekend, so they play one of the teams battling. But then they play against Chelsea, then they play Burnley, and then they finish the season with Man City. So, you're right. They would basically have to get at least 10 points from those final 4 matches. And on paper, it looks like at least 3 losses.
Not looking good.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if you were to tip one, I mean, it comes down, I guess, in a lot of ways to those other 4. We talked about West Ham still being kind of the best, at least, team as far as talent-wise. Out of that group, do you still feel that way?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I said this on last week's show that West Ham are definitely on paper the best talented team. They really shouldn't be anywhere near that end of the table, but they just repetitively find themselves in this type of situation. It's almost become like a cultural issue that they just can't get themselves out of these dogfights. And you look at clubs like Newcastle and Aston Villa, and they kind of have that same kind of feel to them. Like, they're too big to be down there. They've got too much history to be down there. But for whatever reason, they've all kind of taken on these cultures over the last few years that have really just found them constantly yo-yoing between the first and second flight and potentially leaving themselves exposed to some really bad situations.
Real quickly, it looks like, and I don't want to jinx it, because I feel like we've, like the past several years, we've been like, hey, guess who's getting promoted? But it looks like we might get Leeds back in the Premier League next year.
Oh, man. That'd be great for their fans. It's been a long road back after they've scaled, you know, as high as they did before they fell so far. But you kind of get the feeling that Leeds is going to be one of those teams that comes up and goes right back down, and it's just going to leave their fans even more broken than they were beforehand.
Yeah, currently it looks like West Brom are in the lead to possibly win the championship. So it'll be West Brom and Leeds as of this moment are coming back up. So a quick return for West Brom. And then you have four very interesting teams. You could have Brentford come up. You could have Fulham come back. I think we always have a soft spot for Fulham. They're a likable club. Cardiff is in that group. But I think the other one, like, we could get both Leeds and Nottingham Forest into the Premier League in the same summer.
I mean, those are two of the most storied.
Right. Two former powerhouses.
Oh, you have to get them. I mean, if you're new to the game and you're like, oh, why are you guys getting so buzzed about this? Nottingham Forest won two European championships, right? Won the European Cup twice. Leeds was in the Champions League semifinal like 15 years ago, and that seems a long time ago when I say it, but it really wasn't that long ago in the grand scheme of things. So I'm equally excited. Every time those two flirt with promotion, I always get like a little excited for them. Both because they've got such cool histories, but also because their fans have been long awaiting the return to the top flight.
So yeah, that could be pretty sweet if we get one, if not possibly both of those teams in the Premier League next year. Any other matches? I know there's a lot of matches, obviously, that took place with teams that aren't exactly in position to either drop down or get a European place. You mentioned your boys who will play here pretty soon, you know, not too many hours from now. I don't know. What do you got on that? What do you got on your boys, on your Spurs? Where's your temp check on them? Cause I work with two Spurs supporters, and I feel like they've both just like walked away from the rest of the season. Like they don't care. They're done with Mourinho. The play is bad. They're not, you know, you're not achieving it. Nothing's getting achieved this year. It's just, we're done. Move on.
It's definitely been a sharp departure from what we've gotten comfortable with over the last few years as Spurs fans. We've had a relatively very purple patch, at least as far as our perspective goes, with an upward trajectory, almost uninterrupted for 10 years. And it culminated with us making it all the way to a Champions League final and getting deep-pantsed 2 minutes into it.
And does it feel longer than, what, 12 or 14 months ago?
That feels like 3 years ago at this point. Yeah. I mean, we've all aged a year over the last couple months anyway.
Right.
But I mean, it definitely feels like that was two or three Champions League finals ago now at this point. And we've not even had the next one yet. The decline has just been very swift. And we've gone from like a team that looked like it had a concrete plan to a team that literally looks like it needs to be blown up and started over again. And
will that actually happen, though?
Yeah.
Will they blow it up and try to start over?
It kind of looks like some of the pieces are moving that direction in some respects. Some of our long-serving players look like they're on their way out. Guys like Jan Vertonghen, you know, is going to be out of contract. We've seen, you know, guys like Danny Rose shipped out on loan. Aging players in the back, inconsistent players through midfield. thin. We still haven't replaced or given Harry Kane a support striker of any quality in like the 5 to 7 years he's been on top there.
But isn't that the worry, though, with a rebuild, that you'll lose Kane in the process?
Of course it is. And Mourinho is – I've talked about this multiple times. When he leaves clubs, they're always worse off than when he arrived. That's just – that's how he leaves. Even you could win a European Cup, a Champions League trophy, and your club will be in tatters when he leaves. That's just – that's how he does it. And you know, I worry about Kane being off. I worry about us not promoting youngsters out of our academy at the right rate. The types of things that have been Spurs bread and butter for the last 5 years just really seem like they're not a part of the equation any longer. And yeah, I'm definitely concerned. I'm watching games, but it's kind of like, well, I'm just doing this because I feel like obligated to do so right now.
Yeah, no, I get that. I think it's got to be a tough position, especially just given some of the high highs you guys have had. You know, not even just the Champions League final, but the constant Champions League place contention that you guys have been in. And here you stand. I mean, granted, you win tomorrow and you can go all the way up to seventh for a few days. But at the moment, you're in 10th. And the season's very nearly over.
I think if you contrasted our opinions about what we felt about our two sides compared to the beginning of the season, you were probably feeling a lot more like me then, hopeful, but, you know, not expecting much.
Yeah.
And now you're kind of like, you know, we could kick our heels up a little bit and probably trip our way into the Champions League. Whereas we're like, you know, hopeful to get anything out of the season at this point.
Winners and wankers?
I think that's the part of the show that we're at. Who you got for your winner this week?
I got to do it. I always have to squeeze them in there anytime there's a big to-do or a big thing that happened. But your chair boys are 90 minutes away from joining the championship.
I mean, you got to be feeling tingly a little bit.
It's kind of wild to think that this is what's happening. You know, Wycombe Wanderers were headed into this season tipped by most pundits to immediately get relegated and to go down. They barely survived last year, and the thought was that they were just going to go straight back down, that they just didn't have the money, they couldn't bring in enough players, they couldn't do it. And they get themselves into the playoffs. Yes, it was because they had to go with a different kind of metric to decide who would be in the playoffs. But they get in. They played Fleetwood Town, managed by your boy, Joey Barton.
Oh, man.
Which, in the first leg, they, much like Joey Barton, Fleetwood Town finished the match with 9 men. 4-1 final in favor of the Chairboys. And then it was a 2-2 draw in the second leg. They move on. They will actually play Oxford United, which is like one of their big rivals, like big local rivals is Oxford United. And that's who they're going to play. And one of those squads are going up to the championship. And you're right, just a couple seasons ago, I started watching the Wycombe Wanderers. At this point, it was almost 5 years. It was like 2015. But now here I am on the cusp of seeing them getting promoted for the second time.
It's kind of wild. I'm looking. You started following Wycombe literally out of something that we decided to do on the podcast because we were going to have a third division professional club here in Cincinnati at that point. A fourth division team here in Cincinnati at that point. We were like, hey, we should follow an English fourth division team just to kind of see what it's like over there. And you like literally put out on Twitter, hey, which team should I follow? And they replied to you along with a bunch of their fans.
Yeah.
And were like, convince Jeremy. And you're like, I'm hooked. And the team that I ended up picking was Morecambe. And
how they doing?
They finished third from bottom in League Two this year.
Okay.
So Just
so they nearly fell out the moon door into non-league football.
So contrasting fates there for sure. But I saw that go down and I was like, oh man, Jeremy has got to be over the moon right now. But we'll check back. We'll check back in with you in a couple weeks and see how you feel then.
Well, I mean, the game's on Monday.
Oh man, we don't even have to wait that long.
No. So by the time we pod next, it will be known if the Chairboys miracle run will come to an end and they just stay in League One, which is still a very good setup for them and have just a fine season, or if they do the unthinkable and take one of the smallest budgets in League One and get themselves promoted.
Good luck. I'm backing your Chairboys this time around.
It'll be on ESPN Plus. Everyone can go and watch it. It's going to be in the middle of the day on Monday. You got nothing better to do. Everybody's been laid off. Your winner.
My winner, I'm going to go to Black Players for Change, the new Black Players movement within Major League Soccer to support greater diversity efforts and obviously to give players of color a voice within Major League Soccer's leadership group. And they really had a pretty influential moment that they convinced the league and ESPN to buy into for this very first game in MLS's back and to really make a statement. And they made an extremely impactful one, in my opinion. I think it's one that many people shared across soccer Twitter and beyond this evening. And that was to have not only a moment where all the players would take the field and take a knee and support of Black lives across the country, but then they also had the foresight to make that an 8-minute tribute. The reason behind that, obviously, how long George Floyd had a knee on his neck. And then they also brought out every single Black player in the league onto the field to stand with those players in solidarity. And it was just a really interesting and unique thing that this type of scenario would only allow for, like no other type right. of start would allow you to do that. And two, to actually execute that and get everyone to buy in is just a really cool statement to see, especially when there's been so much controversy in the country. MLS found a unique way through the leadership of these players to address a very sensitive topic in a way that I thought hopefully touched some people and maybe changed some opinions as well.
Yeah, I was going to say in a league where player league relations are not at a good place and haven't been at a good place for a long time, the fact that this group was able to kind of just get everybody, as you said, everybody on board and get it to happen and get, you know, obviously tell the league and ESPN like, hey, ESPN, like you're going to air 8 minutes of this silent, you know, protest here. Like it's going to be 8 minutes of dead air essentially.
Yeah. And for a league that had said going into this, like, hey, we're not going to be playing the national anthem before games down here. There aren't fans here to stand for it anyway. You know, that created an opportunity where maybe these players wouldn't have had the opportunity to hear their voice heard. And they found a way to do that in a very impactful fashion. And one that I think, I mean, it's gotten tons of play on SportsCenter as we've been recording this. I've definitely seen that come up more than a few times. So it was some clever, intuitive thinking on their part to take advantage of the opportunity and to do something special. The restart that's been clouded by a lot of things that have not been great.
Yeah. You know, out of a lot of bad does come some positive and some hope, as always. And yeah, very, very powerful moment. Your wanker.
My wanker, man, you know, there's
a lot of options.
So many places to go with this. You know, we've seen some things that are probably worthy of shunning, you know, out of the bubble. We've seen, you know, people making fools of themselves on your fucking mask. Just it's so damn easy. I know that people feel like this is some crazy violation of their constitutional rights, but it's a piece of cloth, and it will maybe save some lives. And even if it maybe saves one, that's one person that didn't have to die. Just it's so damn easy. Wear your mask.
Please. Yeah, I think the mask thing is an issue for people because it's not about them. It's actually it's a selfless act instead of a selfish act. Because the way the mask situation works is the mask is actually doing more to keep you from getting someone else sick than someone else than protecting you from getting sick, right? So it's actually you're doing something for others and not for yourself. And there's just a lot of not a lot of people don't like doing that.
Yeah, that's not a thing with most Americans, unfortunately. And we live in a hotbed of that. So to the people who don't listen to this, screw you. And if you are someone who listens and you're not wearing a mask, I'm going to be honest, screw you too. And if this is something that we lose you over, I don't care. It just be a little bit more than just for yourself for once. And think of your fellow human.
You've listened to this awful podcast for 7 years. If it's us talking about masks gets you to leave, then man, I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, I know, right? Who is your wanker?
My wanker is I was kind of debating which one to go with because I didn't know what angle you were going to take, and I didn't want to double up. But since you didn't, I will go ahead and do it. And I'm not even going to say his name, but obviously the guy that works for apparently a podcast good enough to get him credentialed to some Zoom MLS press conferences that fired off you can do a bad you can have a bad take that's a bad take for one reason. This guy had a bad take that was a bad take for like multiple reasons. One, it was just a dumb take. Two, it was basically saying that the Black Lives Matter movement was drummed up and not legitimate. And then three, you're making fun of a player with what appeared to be a pretty serious injury. And this was obviously in reference to Reyes going down in the match tonight after taking a elbow from Dom Dwyer, who, by the way, sort of runner-up in this wanker department as he was out in full form. I mean, he was mid-season form. No, there was no COVID rust on Dom Dwyer. He was the player you expected him to be.
And if there was, he literally knocked that rust off into Reyes' yes. neck.
Yeah. Also, like the part where the ball, like Robles parries the ball away, and then it goes straight to Dom Dwyer, who you're like, oh, he's just going to kick this into this open net. But instead, somehow the ball like took his legs out from him, and he just fell over instead.
Oh yeah, that was great.
But yeah, I mean, just I again, I don't want to say the tweet. I don't want to say this person's name because I don't want to give that person any more, airtime or runway than they should ever been given.
Yeah.
But if that's what you're doing, if that's your mindset to think that it's a good idea to vocalize both of those terrible opinions, good luck getting that next credential.
Yeah, you've now been blacklisted.
Also, like, even if you do get that credential and it's down the road in a match where media is actually there in person, not sure anyone in that press box is going to be talking to you.
Yeah,
because pretty much everybody in MLS media came out and destroyed you within seconds.
Yeah, you didn't make any friends tonight, that's for sure. Well, that brings us to the end of this week's show. Thanks for bearing with us as we had all of our technical difficulties over the last few weeks. Hopefully that means I'll get this one up in a timely fashion. Yeah, yeah. I wrote a letter to my younger self.